I'm very happy today to welcome back to the show Andrew Chesnut. He is a professor of religious studies at Virginia Commonwealth University. His latest book is called Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint. And we had you on the air, Andrew, something like 7 or 8 years ago when your previous book came out, which was called Competitive Spirits. It's all about Latin American religions.
Yeah, if memory serves me, Mary Charlotte, I think it was here in spring 2005 talking about competitive spirits.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's great to have you back. That was a terrific and very memorable book. And this is also the skeleton saint Santa Muerte. What is she? Who is she? Can she really be called a saint?
In a nutshell, she's a Mexican folk saint who personifies death. By folk saint, there's a whole category, a legion of saints from Mexico down to Argentina who are unofficial saints who have not been canonized by the Catholic Church, yet in many cases actually claim more devotees than the canonized saints in Catholic Church. If you look at her, the Mexican Santa Muerte basically is a female representation of the Grim Reaper. In fact, in the book, I refer to her as the Grim Reaperess.
Right.
There are two other skeletal folk saints in Latin America, one in Argentina and the other in Guatemala. And the big difference with those two is that they're masculine personifications of death. So Santa Muerte is our sole female skeletal folk saint in the Americas.
That said, there's all these little figurines that we see around the Day of the Dead of little Mexican skeleton people in tableaus and things like that that are part of Mexican folk culture.
Yeah, you're mostly referring to a figure that many have called a totemic or iconic of Mexican culture, and that would be La Catrina Calavera, who's actually often translated in English as the playful skeleton, a representation of a high society Mexican lady from the beginning of the 20th century and has existed now for almost a century. And she's kind of omnipresent in Mexican culture, and you especially see her a lot on the Days of the Dead in Mexico. So there is a certain connection here to the growing cult of Santa Muerte, but they're two different entities.
The prevalence of this Santa Muerte is remarkable. According to your research, about 5 million people in Mexico are devotees of this so-called saint.
Yeah, and I think I wrote that maybe 3 years ago in 2009. So I'm estimating that both here in the U.S. and across the border in Mexico, we're probably looking now at some 10 million devotees. And this is, again, the cult only goes public in 2001, so a little more than 10 years. So mushrooming is not an exaggeration to describe what the cult's been doing on both sides of the border.
Well, and what's amazing, I mean, you tell some stories in this book, a very readable book. It's not written for academics only by any means. It's a fascinating book. I mean, you were at some kind of mini-mart in Richmond, Virginia, and you found that in Richmond there were many, many devotees of the Santa Muerte.
Yeah, I think of all the places where I did research, that really was my most extraordinary find, because I knew I would find her on the U.S.-Mexican border. I knew I'd find her in places like L.A. and Albuquerque and Houston. But to find her in my new hometown of Richmond, Virginia was extraordinary, because the Latino population really doesn't exceed 5%. And nonetheless, I could find her paraphernalia, her votive candles, her prayer cards in mini-marts not more than a mile from my home in an area that is not predominantly Latino. So I find that truly indicative that Santa Muerte, again, in less than 10 years, is pretty much everywhere here in the United States.
What are the people like, if you can even make a kind of category, but what are the people like who, would you say, worship her or follow her?
You could say worship. I think I usually say venerate, but yeah, you could also say worship. They're a cross-section of Mexicans. I think all Mexicans from all walks of life are represented. However, she does have a special appeal to Mexicans who live on the margins, particularly those who feel like death might be imminent in their daily lives. And you can imagine those are certain people with certain types of jobs and professions. Narcos, prostitutes who work on the street, other people who live on the street. Mexico is an extremely dangerous place these days. Homicide rate is number 10 in the world. Being here in Santa Fe, people probably are aware of all the murder across the border in Ciudad Juarez, Baghdad on the border. So in the last five, we're now approaching almost 50,000 deaths since President Calderon took over in Mexico at the end of 2006. So she has proliferated at a time of great death and dying in Mexico.
People who are in those dangerous professions, in those dangerous places, living on the margins, and just people who are poor, where death comes very quickly. You don't have health care, you don't have the kind of safety that we might take for granted here.
Exactly. So that's one of the interesting paradoxes of the cult that never ceases to intrigue me, that here is the figure, the personification of death. Yet for many devotees, particularly those who are feeling like death might be around the corner, they are imploring her for more grains of sand in the hourglass of time. So this great paradox of people looking to Saint Death to actually ask for a few more hours, days, years of life.
Exactly. And I think the fact that, I mean, there are people who use Santa Muerte to protect their drug shipments and to protect what are basically major criminal activities. And it made me think about your last book, Competitive Spirits, in which you talked about there are some Latin American religions where morality is not really on the top of the list of things that it's about. It's really about personal protection and survival.
Exactly. And this is more so since she is a folk saint and is not an official Catholic canonized saint. That does mean that people can ask her, can petition her for the types of requests that you probably shouldn't be making to Catholic canonized saints. So yeah, if you're a narco, if you're a cartel member, you definitely can ask her to bless that shipment on its way to Houston or Atlanta or wherever it's bound. So yeah, there's a certain amorality that pervades the cult for some devotees. I should say that in my own research, I find that most devotees I've come across approach her in the same way they would the Virgin of Guadalupe, the patroness of Mexico, or other folk saints, and are asking her for very type of Christian type of miracles.
We're talking to Andrew Chesnut about his book, Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint. Now, you actually started out studying the Virgin of Guadalupe rather than this skeleton saint. What happened?
I did. I was more than 2 years into research. I thought this is for my third book. I wanted to pick a monumental topic. And for those of us who study religion in Latin America, probably no more monumental topic than the Virgin of Guadalupe, who is the most important manifestation of the Virgin Mary in the entire world, has the whole Western Hemisphere, the Americas, as her dominion. But I wasn't going anywhere with the research. I didn't feel the passion that had propelled me in my previous research. And lo and behold, I see the news in March 2009 that the Mexican army has moved into the border and backhoed and bulldozed some 40 shrines, particularly on the Texas-Mexico and California borders, bulldozed some 40 Santa Muerte shrines, and I just found that intriguing. I already knew about her from previous trips to Mexico, and so that really got me going. I did a quick Google search, found out that there was no serious scholarship in English, and said, all right, Virgin Guadalupe, you're going to have to be put on hold, and I dove into this, and thus the result is the book.
Now, bulldozing shrines, what kind of shrines are we talking about?
We're mostly talking about makeshift shrines and altars set up on the sides of highways outside of border towns like Tijuana and Nuevo Laredo that devotees spontaneously erect.
And why did the Mexican military bulldoze them?
Because the current Mexican government has identified Santa Muerte as the premier narco saint. This is a term that they use all the time in Mexico. The previous big narco saint was Jesus Malverde, who is from the northern state of Sinaloa, where we have the Sinaloa drug cartel, probably the strongest these days in Mexico. But since Santa Muerte went public 10 years ago, she has far eclipsed Jesus Malverde as the number one narco saint. So it's the fact that many narcos, and particularly high-level narcos, have been apprehended with Santa Muerte paraphernalia on them or arrested at safe houses where you actually have altars.
Does this tell us, I mean, how do you interpret that? Does the Mexican military believe in the power of the saint, or why? I mean, why would they bulldoze it?
The current National Action Party, the current governing party in Mexico, is closely allied with the Catholic Church in Mexico. And so it was probably the case that there was considerable pressure exercised on the part of the Catholic hierarchy in Mexico to go after a figure they see as both satanic and a rival. The Catholic Church in Mexico and throughout Latin America, as I write about in Competitive Spirits, is facing serious competition, more serious competition from the likes of Pentecostalism. But nonetheless, the fact that Santa Muerte has grown to such extent in less than 10 years obviously represents a threat to the Catholic Church in Mexico, which is facing declining membership.
Just to give people a very brief sense of your previous book, I mean, you basically compare Latin American religion to a kind of, on the one hand, the Catholic Church as a giant monopoly that's really bad at customer service, and on the other hand, Pentecostal religions, some African diaspora religions, charismatic Catholic, and so on, that really identify potential customers, go after them, and give them tremendous customer service.
Right, right. The lens or the paradigm through which I look at this is called religious economy. And since the decentralization and demonopolization of the Catholic Church, you essentially have a free market of religion, analogous to what we have here in the United States, the biggest market, free market of religion. So yes, today you no longer are necessarily born into the Catholic Church, and the Catholic Church, the former, who had a monopoly for almost five centuries in Latin America, now is compelled to compete for the souls of Mexicans and other Latin Americans as well. And so the overriding tendency has been increasing pluralization of the Latin American landscape, and Santa Muerte is a small part of this trend of pluralization, where Mexicans and all Latin Americans have far more options than they used to.
And it's so interesting, because after I read your book, I started to really see in action what you were talking about. For example, a neighbor of mine who I believe had been born into a Catholic family became a Baptist. And when she went through some really bad family situations, there was basically a small council from her church that came over to her house, and they discussed things and helped her decide what she was going to do and made sure that she had enough money to live. And it was like, This is a really functional church.
Yeah, yeah. The Pentecostals, and I'll include the Baptists in Latin America as well, have been really good at coming to people, particularly in their moments of affliction, and offering all kinds of support networks and consolation in the church, and have been doing a much better job than the Catholic Church at meeting people at their points of affliction.
So Santa Muerte doesn't have really any kind of formalized structure, or does it?
There have been, the biggest attempt at institutionalization was a church founded in Mexico City in 2003. But it only was allowed to operate legally for 2 years until 2005, when it had its legal status revoked by the National Action Party, the conservative ruling party in Mexico. So since 2005, it is illegal to found a Santa Muerte church. There are other temples and other groups that do operate, but this is in clandestine fashion. In fact, the person who founded this Santa Muerte church in 2003 is now sitting in a prison in Mexico City, having been arrested in January 2011 and charged and convicted for belonging to a kidnapping ring in Mexico City. So there are some self-appointed Santa Muerte leaders and such, but since this is an illegal cult, they're only self-appointed. And I would argue that this is actually counterproductive because it leads to certain extremes with no licit priesthood, with no churches. Members are out there doing whatever they want to in the name of Santa Muerte, and this sometimes can lead to heinous aberrations.
Like what?
Well, we had a case that surfaced in the media just a couple weeks ago of an impoverished family in northern Mexico who apparently made a few ritual human sacrifices to Santa Muerte, thinking that Santa Muerte was demanding human blood in exchange for the miracles, blessings of health and wealth that this family was asking for. So they sacrificed two young boys and a middle-aged woman and specifically offered the human blood to Santa Muerte as a sacrifice. So I would argue that these extreme cases, aberrations, are more likely to happen because the cult has been outlawed in Mexico.
And in that case, they had this whole rationale that the older woman, the middle-aged woman, was a witch.
Right. Apparently one of the family cult leaders who was arrested said that, there was this consensus that she was a witch. But I really don't know more about that. But I should say that brujeria or witchcraft is still very widespread in certain sectors of Mexico, and there are those who kind of integrate the Santa Muerte tradition into witchcraft and counter sorcery and such as well.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it sounds a little bit like the pot calling the kettle black to make a human sacrifice and of somebody who you're saying is a witch.
Yeah. And again, I don't really feel like I can comment much on this case because this is all I know is that, yes, we thought she was a witch, but I don't have any more details on this particular case.
We're talking to Andrew Chesnut about his book Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint. So what are the rituals like, the activities like? To what extent are they individual activities, group activities? What does it actually look like in your research that you've seen?
Yeah, there's a combination of collective rituals, and the most important one is the monthly Santa Muerte rosary service, which occurs at the historic shrine of the woman who basically helped the cult make the transition more from an occult practice to the public cult that it is today. On All Saints Day 2001, she holds a monthly, what she calls, rosary service, the first day of every month, in which thousands of devotees from Mexico City gather for an hour and a half service, which in many ways resembles a Catholic Mass. In fact, many of the prayers are essentially standard Catholic prayers in which Santa Muerte, the name of Santa Muerte, substitute the Virgin Mary. In fact, the rosary, of course, is one of the epic prayers to the Virgin Mary of Catholicism, but this is taking the rosary and applying it to Santa Muerte. So much of the ritual devotion to Santa Muerte is all predicated on a substructure of Catholicism. And indeed, almost every devotee I interviewed in Mexico said, "I'm Catholic." And didn't either know that the church had made official condemnations of worship of Saint Death, or didn't care, and found this as kind of complementary part of their Catholicism, and aren't necessarily exclusive in their veneration of Santa Muerte. Some of them will still go to Virgin of Guadalupe or Saint Jude, the patron of lost causes, who's also huge in Mexico as well. So the great majority of them still see themselves as Catholic. Maybe they haven't set foot in a Catholic church for 5 or 10 years. Nonetheless, they will tell you that they are Catholic.
And they grew up practicing Catholicism, and of course Catholicism is, particularly Latin American and Latin Catholicism, is full of the veneration of all kinds of saints, whether it be in Spain, Italy, Mexico, wherever.
Yeah, in fact, In fact, the term that we use in religious studies is this is a hagiocentric form of Catholicism, meaning it's saint-centered. The stars of this type of folk or popular Catholicism indeed are the saints. And so, in veneration of Santa Muerte, there's great continuity with folk or popular Catholicism. I think it's probably starting to move in the direction that it's that we could probably start to call it a new religious movement, and that it's kind of crossing boundaries that are no longer really Christian, but definitely still the whole substructure of forms of devotion is folk Catholicism.
If I may ask, I mean, you talk about and write about the economy, religious economies. Is anybody profiting from this?
Oh, yeah, definitely. In fact, one of my chapters, The Gold Candle of Abundance and Prosperity, details how so many small business people today in Mexico are really are kept afloat by sales of Santa Muerte paraphernalia. And I found out that one of the great advantage that she has in sales compared to the Catholic saints and even the patroness of Mexico, the Virgin Guadalupe, is that at this point, she has no annual feast day. And so she's a saint for all seasons. Her sales are year-round, whereas all the shopkeepers at religious article stores in Mexico, the botanicas, told me that the saints usually only will sell a couple days up to their annual feast day. And so a lot of these stores told me half of my sales in the past 5 or 6 years are based on sales of the Bony Lady, one of her common one of her common nicknames. And there's merchandising, there's T-shirts, there's Nike tennis shoes, Santa Muerte, there's medallions. So yeah, this is a multi-million dollar business. Of course, many of the products, of course, are manufactured in China, particularly the figurines and not the votive candles, but figurines and a lot of the paraphernalia actually comes from China.
But it's not a case where you have, for example, mega churches and these ministers who are multimillionaires driving 17 white Buicks.
Not yet. Not yet. Yeah, and it's interesting that you should say that, because in a certain way there are connections to evangelical Protestant prosperity theology or the health and wealth gospel, because one of the biggest colored votive candles in her cult is the gold one, which is for prosperity and abundance. And this is probably one of the candles that devotees light the most, because last few years Mexico has really been in economic dire straits. The tourist industry has been devastated. We North Americans hardly go to Mexico anymore because we turn on the TV and we see that Acapulco, for example, has become a war zone. So it's not the level of many of the prominent televangelists here in the United States. But many Mexicans today are kept afloat on basis of sale of her merchandise.
Now, the chapters of your book are named after the candles. Each candle has a color, and each color represents a whole domain of human experience, and they light the candles to basically help them in whatever that domain is. Let's talk about each one of these. There's brown, blue, gold, white, black, red, have I gotten them all?
Yeah.
Multicolored candles?
Right. Until probably about a decade ago, there were three historic colors of candles. The red, the white, and the black. Red is for love and passion. White is for thanksgiving, consecration, protection. And black is the interesting one that you actually see the least, but is the most controversial. On the one hand, it represents protection from those who might be coming after you, protection from witchcraft or sorcery, but also, and they usually won't tell you this, but also for matters of injury or harm. If you're looking to take a rival out of your path, then the black Santa Muerte candle is the one for you. The number one selling candle, because I surveyed all the shopkeepers, tens of shopkeepers in Mexico, the number one selling color is the red one of love and passion. And you will never see, this is the first time you're going to hear this in any kind of media in the U.S., because the media on both sides of the border only wants to focus on the black candle of Santa Muerte, the narco saint. So what she mostly does, particularly for Mexican women, is she goes after Mexican men who are behaving badly, or imagined to be behaving badly. She goes after them, she ties them up, and she delivers them humbled at the aggrieved spouse's or girlfriend's feet. And so this is one of the most important things that she does, is love magic, particularly employed by Mexican women. But you'll never read about it because it's not narco related.
Right. Now, okay, so let's look at this, because some of these stories are represented in movies and stories that you've heard. And so Mexican women, let's say, a woman whose husband is perhaps being unfaithful to her, will go to the botanica or whatever, buy a red candle, and then what?
And then put it at probably a home altar that she has, and ask the bony lady to A, either go after her husband and bring him back and make him faithful, or to take the other woman out of her path, to remove the other woman, however that might play out, or maybe both at the same time. And in fact, from the 1940s, when she first kind of resurfaces in the field notes of mostly American anthropologists, from the 1940s to the 1980s, she exclusively is doing love magic. That's all we see her doing. Time and time after again, our American anthropologists say, oh yeah, I found Santa Muerte in Oaxaca, I found her here in Chiapas, and she's the red candle of love magic. So this is what she's been doing historically until late 1980s, when she starts to hook up also with criminal syndicates in Mexico.
Do the people, and in this case the women who are using Santa Muerte in this way, do they tell you their stories? In other words, and do you ask them, okay, did this work for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and some will give you details, but other are reticent to do that, to talk about their miracles, fearing that Santa Muerte doesn't like that kind of revelations. And if she has a reputation as an incredibly speedy and potent miracle worker, she has the same reputation as a major punisher. And so if you transgress maybe certain norms that she's believed to operate by, you might be fearing her scythe is going to be leveled at you. So yeah, there are certain people who don't believe that it's proper to reveal details of whatever miracle they might have received. But others, sure, would chat away and give me all kinds of details.
I mean, did they tell you that it worked? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Because people tend to, I think, take on magical thinking, and everybody does this, I think, when the chips are down. So when everything is going well, you don't really need magical thinking, but when things are bad, you tend to suddenly be buying candles.
Yeah, well, the fact that I was mostly talking to devotees, this was kind of a self-selected group, right? So in most cases, of course, they're telling me it did work, right? Otherwise, they probably still wouldn't be active devotees. And I found that, you know, I've talked about this in my previous work, that most of these people are very pragmatic in the way they approach religion. And so I found that many of them had come to Santa Muerte after striking out with perhaps the Virgin of Guadalupe, or more importantly with St. Jude, who I already said is really huge on the Mexican religious landscape. Maybe they'd had months in which they're asking St. Jude to deliver on a particular miracle, he doesn't come through, and then a neighbor or a family member said, hey, why don't you try the bony lady? She's really speedy and efficacious with these things. So a lot of people had struck out with other saints and figures before they end up with Santa Muerte. And so presumably most of the people I were talking about were people who felt like their request had been granted.
We're talking to Andrew Chesnut about his new book, Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint. Now let's talk for a moment about the origins of this saint, so-called saint, this folk saint. Is she part Catholic, part indigenous? What are her origins, or do we even know?
Yeah, I guess it depends who you talk to. Most devotees in Mexico don't care about her origins. They only care about her miracle working capacities. But many of the organic intellectuals of the cult will tell you that her roots are indigenous, specifically Aztec or maybe secondarily Mayan. However, in my own research, I'm going to have to come down on saying that she is the product of syncretism between Spanish medieval Catholicism and indigenous death worship traditions in Mexico. But if you have to press me, I'm going to weigh further down on Spanish medieval Catholicism. Let's take, well, this is radio, but if we take a look at her, she is essentially the Grim Reapress, the medieval figure personification of death. And indeed, in Spain, her name is, the Grim Reapress is La Parca. She's a female Grim Reapress. Literally, that would translate as the parched one. And so the Spanish clergy in colonial times in Mexico bring over the figure of the Grim Reapress, La Parca, as a tool of evangelization of the indigenous people of the Americas to basically represent death for them in their evangelization. And so what appears to happen is that the indigenous people interpret this all through their own cultural lens, right? And so they end up taking the figure of La Parca, the Grim Reapress, as a saint in her own right. And so I think this kind of begins the morphing of what was just a figure of death for the medieval Europeans and is morphed into this figure of a folk saint by the indigenous people, particularly in central Mexico, but also in Argentina and Guatemala, since I mentioned that we do have two other skeletal folk saints. So it's a syncretism, but again, I'm going to have to weigh more heavily on the Spanish influence, but that doesn't jibe with Mexican discourse of nationalism, where they want to always uplift everything that's indigenous and reject things that are Spanish.
Ah, very interesting. Okay. How was she, I mean, do they have, is there any correlation in Spain where they have a folk saint taken after this medieval Grim Reapress figure?
No, there really isn't any correlation. And in fact, some of you might know that today Western Europe is kind of a bastion of non-belief, the most secularized region on earth. And so even Spain, which was the seat of the Counter-Reformation and very kind of zealous Catholicism, you'll be hard-pressed to find many Spaniards this day who call themselves active practicing Catholics. So no.
You are a professor. You are going to Mexico to do research. You're an American. You speak excellent Spanish, but still stand out as an American. How did people deal with you? How did you encounter them? Were they reticent to talk to you about what they were doing?
Yeah, I was a bit concerned about that before starting my research, because I hadn't done any major research, despite the fact that I've been going to Mexico since I was 18, the last three decades or so. Most of my research had been in Brazil and Guatemala before. But I would say that all the doors, all the paths were open by meeting the godmother of the cult, Enriqueta Romero, who has the historic shrine in Mexico City, who's the one most responsible for it transforming, morphing into a public cult. Her historic shrine is on her private property. I introduced myself. I was with my Mexican wife. That probably also helped me gain entree. And she gave me her blessing and allowed me to speak with whomever I wanted to for weeks on end in Mexico City. So I think that really helped, the fact that everybody knew that I had the godmother of the cult's blessing, and so would easily talk to me.
Maybe she lit a candle for you.
It's possible. And again, my wife is from the western state of Michoacán. She was along with me. And so I think kind of as a research team, that probably helped as well. And so I was very surprised by actually how easy the research was, being a North American gringo researcher. I had no problems whatsoever.
We've talked about the red candle and to some extent the gold candle. People light the gold candles to have prosperity, and it's part of this whole prosperity consciousness that goes across so many different religions, cults, ways of thinking, whatever you want to call them, including New Age American. What are some of the other colors and what they represent that you found interesting?
Yeah, the purple candle, although it's not one of the most popular, represents health and healing. And this is another huge overlooked aspect of her identity. So many people at Enriqueta Romero's historic shrine in Mexico City were there either asking for miracles of health or giving thanks for miracles of health that already had occurred. So this is in great continuity with not only folk Catholicism, but folk religion in general in Latin America, which is so concerned with health and healing of illnesses which are usually related to the experience of being poor in Latin America. So she's also a great curandera, a great healer as well, but you'll never see this in mass media accounts of her as well. So the purple candles out there, we even have this specific yellow candle, not the gold candle of prosperity and abundance, but the yellow candle is also for a specific type of health, and that's recovery for addicts, for drug addicts, alcoholics. And that's also big as well. But who would imagine, because her altars are often awash in all kinds of alcohol, particularly tequila, the iconic Mexican alcohol. But nonetheless, many devotees also find her to be a powerful healer for matters of alcoholism. There's also growing addiction to methamphetamines and all other kinds of drugs as well, as the whole narco industry has proliferated over the last decade and a half.
There are public shrines, and then there are also private altars that people have in their houses. What's on those altars? What's in those shrines? What kind of offerings do people make?
Yeah, there's lots of things. The two most important elements on any altar would be the colored votive candles, whatever your choice might be, and the statuette or figurine of Santa Muerte. Those are kind of the two sine non qua items on the altar. And then you'd have a series of offerings that devotees would make, and those usually are food and drink based. Fruit, apples are very important because apples represent not the forbidden fruit of the Garden of Eden, but represent abundance. Again, since she's a skeleton, she's perpetually parched. You'll recall that her Spanish name is La Parca, or the parched one. And so she always has to have a glass of water. And again, since she is Mexican and she's an earthy saint, people believe that she likes to drink alcohol as well. So you often find tequila and beer. Not so much wine, because popular class Mexicans don't really drink much wine. So mostly tequila and beer. Flowers, balloons. Mexico is the number one producer and consumer of balloons. If you spend any time in Mexico, you see balloons are everywhere. So many of her home altars would have balloons as well. Coins, offering coins for matters of prosperity. So those would be some of the more common items. And then with people who have more developed altars, they start to get kind of idiosyncratic. And despite the fact that among non-believers she has a reputation as being a very jealous saint, you often will find her accompanied by all kinds of other saints. And they're often the canonized saints. Virgin of Guadalupe might be at her altar. St. Jude, the patron of lost causes, might be there. So she often is accompanied by an entourage. And again, these are often canonized Catholic saints.
There are parallels to, and I think, as you say in your book, direct influences from other syncretic religions like Santeria, which is practiced in Cuba, which is a combination of African and Spanish religions.
Yes. Particularly among these organic intellectuals of the cult, and particularly in Mexico City, there is a rather strong Santeria influence. And this is in part due to that a fair amount of Cubans who fled the isle after the revolution in 1959, those who didn't go to Miami, a fair amount went to Mexico City. And so we have a flourishing community of Santeria there in Mexico City. And so there's definitely been crossbreeding, cross-fertilization. But again, it's really more on the more active kind of intellectual self-appointed leaders than at the grassroots of devotion.
But, I mean, just the structure of how things are done, these altars with the candles on them and the offerings, and each saint likes certain things. Is that a universal? I mean, is that something that you see kind of wherever there are folk religions?
Yeah, for the most part. For the most part, there wouldn't be a lot of difference with with the other folk saints in Latin America and the type of altars that we see and offerings offered as well. But yeah, that's not something that I really delved into in much depth for my research. But yeah, the growing influence of Santeria, particularly in Mexico City, is definitely something that I'd like to look into in the future. In fact, I probably shouldn't say it. Well, I already said it in the book. Enriqueta Romero, the godmother of the cult, actually in her home has a whole separate room of icons and paraphernalia associated with Santeria that she keeps separate from other Santa Muerte stuff.
Very interesting. Now, how is the, I mean, you've talked about this a little bit, but how is the Catholic Church reacting to all of this? I mean, this is competition for them, even though some of these people say they are Catholic, too.
Yeah, on several occasions, the Catholic Church in Mexico has made official pronouncements condemning Santa Muerte and the cult as satanic. The basic argument being that as followers of Christ, as Christians, how can we be venerating a figure of death if Christ came to offer us eternal life? Here you're venerating actually the opposite, the antithesis of eternal life, which is a figure of death. So on several occasions, the hierarchy in the Catholic Church in Mexico has condemned her. But again, many people who follow Santa Muerte aren't necessarily aware of this or don't care.
And since it is "quote unquote illegal," I mean, it's not an official religion. It's been banned by not the Catholic Church, but the state of Mexico, the nation of Mexico. Are people? I mean, do they ever go after people? You said they bulldozed these shrines some years ago, but do they try to go after people for just simply practicing or devoting themselves to the Santa Muerte?
No, not besides that, the desecration of altars by the Mexican army, and also, well, again, we do have the arrest and conviction on charges of kidnapping of the founder of the first Santa Muerte Church. It's really not clear, the whole story behind that really isn't clear, but he was a vehement critic of both the Catholic Church and the ruling National Action Party as well. So they definitely had both the federal government and the Catholic Church definitely had reasons to want to take him down.
There was an amazing story in your book about a man who was a notorious kidnapper who cut off the ears of his victims and sent them to the families and made tens of millions of dollars in ransoms before he was caught. It turned out he was a devotee of Santa Muerte, and weirdly, the law enforcement people, whoever they were, allowed him to take his shrines to prison.
Right. Apparently in Mexican prisons, they are very tolerant about the freedom of worship. And so one of the great places of proliferation of occult are Mexican penitentiaries. In fact, I have a nephew in the state of Michoacán who's a prison guard. I write about this in the book. And he says that that Santa Muerte tattoos and altars are right up there with the Virgin of Guadalupe and have probably even surpassed St. Jude, the patron of lost causes. So, and not only is she kind of the patroness of so many incarcerated folks in Mexico, but also of a significant number of prison guards. Again, my nephew told me that probably a quarter of his colleagues, his co-workers at this penitentiary in the state of Michoacán are themselves devotees. And so really more than the patroness of criminals and of narcos, she's really the patroness of the entire Mexican penal system and the drug wars, because we have many municipal police in Mexico and even army grunts who they are themselves devotees. In fact, we can even imagine that maybe some of those folks driving the bulldozers who were bulldozing his shrines might themselves have been devotees and have spent many sleepless nights wondering if they're going to face some type of retribution from the saint who has a terrible reputation for punishing.
With no doubt resultant increase in candle sales.
Right, exactly.
Now, you talk about the rainbow candle, the multicolored candle of the Santa Muerte, which is a kind of synthesis of all the different parts of her cult.
Yeah, and this brings us back to the influence of Santeria. This is actually, this candle, the rainbow seven-colored candle, is actually imported directly from Santeria, where it's called the candle of Siete Potencias, or Seven Power Candle. And this is probably, this is the newest candle of the cult, and this is kind of representative of the conclusion of my book to show this is a cult of many colors, the complexity of the cult. And this is one of the fastest selling candles these days because many people are looking for miracles or blessings on several fronts. And so if you've got more than one issue that you'd like to bring to the Bony Lady, then that rainbow colored seven power candle is the one for you.
So please bring me money, heal my festering boils, and bring my husband back to me.
And make sure my son makes it okay in crossing the border into Texas or New Mexico and doesn't get apprehended. Yeah.
Now, for you as a scholar of religion, you're looking at all this cultural activity in an academic way, in a scholarly way, in an anthropological way to some extent, and you're working with people who presumably tell you this stuff works. What do you think of that yourself as a human being relating to other human beings?
I take them at their word because I don't see it as my charge or role to determine whether it works or not, because at the end of the day, it's all a matter of faith. And if they believe that Santa Muerte did deliver and granted that person a job that they didn't have, I don't feel like it's part of my charge to investigate whether Santa Muerte was really, at the end of the day, that's not something I could determine anyway. And so I guess that's part of the intriguing aspect of what I do that keeps me going, is that there, at the end of the day, there's so much that's kind of inexplicable and incomprehensible if you particularly aren't a believer in that particular religious tradition. And in which this case, I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a kind of ongoing, fascinating part of the study of religion is the question, I mean, to me, of is this all really just a matter of people deluding themselves, or is there actually something, for lack of a better word, real going on?
Yeah, I think again, one of the reasons for her great growth is that many people believe that she is incredibly reliable, fast, and potent. And that's what people are most looking for, is for their blessings and miracles to be delivered on a quick, speedy basis. And so for whatever reason, she's developed this reputation, and obviously there's millions of people who believe that she does deliver, more so than rival saints and spirits and such. And so I would explain that that's the great appeal. Basis of her appeal is that so many people believe she is an incredibly fast and potent miracle worker. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here talking about her.
Andrew Chestnut is a professor of religious studies at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he's author of the new book, Devoted to Death, Santa Muerte, the Skeleton Saint. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte, for having me back. Pleasure.